Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey@wfyi.org. That's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which will hopefully have new content fairly soon, but you can check it out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you just heard is Mr. Argyle, but it's not the Argyle...
It's not Argyle Thursday, but the majority of my sweaters are Argyle, so it happens to be Argyle Thursday, Friday, Tuesday, just by default.
Okay, that's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
In case you want to know what he was wearing. Mm-hmm. And joining us today... You saw him this morning on Indie Style, and now he's here. He starts his day with Indie Style, and he ends it with Film Sociology. He's put in a long day already. That's Chris Lloyd.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, how are you? Oh, by the way, you, sir, are not a bad dad.
I'm not a bad dad.
We were discussing dad stuff with movies, and can I share it?
Sure.
You asked me about watching... How old is he?
Just turned three.
Just turned three. You asked if it was okay to show your three-year-old son Pacific Rim, and Film Sociology says yes.
I get the stamp of approval?
Heck yes. Nothing wrong with that.
Outstanding.
Yes. So...
We have ruled.
That's right. And nobody can overturn it.
Yes.
So, how do you like it?
Pacific Rim?
Yeah.
I love it. It's probably my favorite movie of the year, and that's just not to say that I think it's the best movie of the year, because, you know, when you're talking about... What's like a really ambitious, crazy movie like Dallas Buyers Club that we're going to talk about, or Prisoners? I mean, I recognize that those are just fine pieces of filmmaking, and that's what's going to compete for the Oscars. But you ask me what's in my heart of hearts, which is basically a pimply Dungeons and Dragons obsessed 15-year-old.
And this is what you're raising your kid to be. That's
yes,
good.
that guy loves Pacific Rim.
I agree with you on that one.
Dungeons and Mountain Dew.
What?
And Funyuns and Mountain Dew.
Oh, dude. And Bismo Funyuns and Mountain Dew. Yes, that was my favorite film of the summer. Now, that's not saying a whole lot because we had a really weak summer, but that was, I just remember the grins on our silly faces as we looked at each other during the closing credits of that picture.
Yeah, it's a very specific guy, male thing, and a very specific subset of male, like non-jock, nerd, geek, you know, anyone
right.
in
These
there.
Were, if you were old enough, if you remembered that there were Japanese monster movies on a regular, shown on TV on a regular basis, along with kung fu movies and horror movies.
Right.
So, and it just threw us back, and Guillermo del Toro, who directed this, knows the genre very well.
Yeah.
Knows it, loves it, and showed it. And my one rule, and I've ranted about this for years, if you're gonna have two big behemoth things beating the tar out of each other, let me see it. Don't give me these Transformers and other close-ups.
I can't track what's happening.
Right. I mean, it, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago, this would be Rick Baker and another person in a suit beating each other up.
Yeah.
But it's got better camera work and the technology's there.
Yeah, and I, you know, whenever I have to try and explain the appeal of the movie to other people, because, you know, it did not do particularly well here in the U.S. It made a ton of money overseas, so overall, it, you know, it was a hit, but not so much here.
And by the way, we don't. It's not really a matter of a film is good or bad when it makes money or doesn't make money. But we have to admit when it's something that we particularly are fond of and it makes us feel good.
I admit to being someone who I follow box office tallies closely just because
you're the problem.
I'm biased. I want the movies that I like to do well,
yes.
And I want the movies that are terrible
to
go
away
and die. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm part of it. So, but I'm not on Monday, so I don't have to announce the list.
Yeah, but Pacific Rim, that's the one I keep having to like reach out to different constituencies and explain to them why it's so awesome. And it usually comes down to something like, did I explain to you that there are giant robots and giant monsters and they fight each other?
That's right. So
why is it awesome? It just is, all right.
That's the 15-year-old response. But now we have school and careers back. So anyway, how did your son like Pacific Rim?
He loves it. We probably watched it not all the way through because I do skip through the boring parts plus the
the human parts.
Yeah,
you notice
the
character
human
stuff.
Parts, the non-robot parts.
The non-plot things.
Plus a couple moments that are a little intense, too intense for him. I do skip through those.
Uh-huh.
Learn the beauty of the chapter advance button because then it doesn't feel like I'm skipping forward.
Sure.
It just feels like it just jumped.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've probably watched it through probably about four or five times now. He has his own pet name for it.
Whoa,
he
really?
He calls it Starker Man.
What?
That's just become his thing. Like, anything with, like, robots. We were at – okay, here's the story. We were at the vet because our dog ate raisins, which – did you know that raisins are toxic to dogs?
I knew chocolate was, but
raisins and grapes are toxic to dogs, like, the point where we thought he might actually die. So, a whole preemptive thing. So, we're there, and they have some toys in a box for kids that come to visit, including some Transformers type of thing. And it's like late at night for him. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. He picks up this robot, starts careening around the office, making trouble, and he refers to this robot as Starker Man.
Okay.
So when I showed him the Pacific Rim movie, he immediately saw the robot in the front and said, Starker Man! So that's it's the Starker Man movie.
All right. That's cool. I remember Emma, well, it was like Pokio.
Yeah.
Which was Pinocchio. So, you know, kids have a funny way of, you know, the giant monkey movie. She wanted to see, she saw the trailer for Peter Jackson's King Kong and she called it the big monkey movie, giant monkey movie. I'm like,
yeah. And to the listeners out there, I am planning to write that up as a children's book, Starker Man, The Adventures of Starker Man. So
absolutely.
See with a circle around it.
When she was five, this goes back to my days at Nuvo and Lisa Godier when she was there. She got a press kit for Spamalot, the best looking press kit I have ever seen.
Wow.
Because it came with a can of Spam with the characters from Spamalot in Gilliam-esque animation, and then there was a Killer Bunny puppet, and Emma saw the puppet and just that got her curiosity. Like, what is that? And I explained it to her. And she goes, what every dad wants to hear their daughter say, do you have this movie? And I said, yes. Will you show it to me? Well, I'll show you the scene. I'll show you where the killer bunny comes from. So I showed her that scene, and she laughed her head off. And then she goes, can I see some more? Which every dad wants to hear. So, yeah, then it was showing her what's it like you. You know, you want to get past the talking part. So fighting the Black Knight and the killer rabbit and the Trojan rabbit and stalking the wedding and, you know, all the physical stuff. And then when she's ready, you show it to her all, you know, show her the whole picture. So
when did the bridge and the three questions, when did you get to see that?
That was probably maybe third or fourth viewing. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. So please let us know when you get through Pacific Rim start to finish with your son. This will be a landmark day, even if the women in our lives shake their heads at us.
Outstanding.
Yes. So you all right over there, Cub?
Oh, I'm good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to start with, opening in theaters today, and I love announcing this because there's just a little ray of hope, but there's an NC-17 movie in Indianapolis.
That's right.
And there's nothing wrong with it. Can't buy liquor, can't buy a car on Sundays, but you can see an NC-17 movie in Indiana, so there.
Yeah, is it playing anywhere other than the Landmark Keystone?
No, I don't think that's going to.
And they did not screen this for us.
Although I read you had the inside scoop because you have a yapper with Chicago connections, which sounds more nefarious than it really is.
Yeah, technically, we actually have a yapper in Chicago. We actually have a one in Wisconsin. We actually have one in Great Britain, if you can believe it.
You better not have one in Fort Myers. That's all I have to say.
No. But this is actually not our Chicago yapper, but our West Lafayette yapper who drove to Chicago to see it.
He wanted to see a 15-year-old French girl in NC-17 situations.
Yep. So the Nick Rogers has a great review up on the Film Yap of this. Go see it. Everyone's heard about this movie. If you haven't, it won the grand prize at the Cannes Film Festival. A lot of people talking about it, mostly because it's about a young, like, teenage lesbian couple. But apparently the sex in this is very, very explicit. They keep saying that, and I don't know what that means.
Right.
But, I mean,
one way of finding out.
I guess we're gonna find out.
Yes, but not as a group trip. That would be weird. We'll have to talk to our significant others.
Now, I've heard different reviews on this. Nick loved it. He gave it the coveted 5 out of 5 yaps.
And how often?
Coveted 5 out.
And how often does that happen?
What was the last thing he 5 out of 5 yapped?
Or you guys 5 out of 5 yapped?
Well, as I say, I'm the tough one. Like, 2011 was the last time I gave
you
it.
You know what
he
is? He's the Richard Propes of the film, yeah.
But I think for Nick, it's been a while. He does not give them out easily.
Okay. Well, that's here.
It is 3 hours long, which I don't know if you knew.
3 hours, yes. 3 hours.
And it's not all sex during that time.
3 hours, NC-17, and in French. I wish I was on conservative talk trying to sell this. Or commercial radio, for that matter.
Nick calls it one of the 10 best of the year, so take
okay.
It.
Well, one of the other movies that people are talking about, because we are in grown-up movie season, and yes, we are in award screener season. Thank you very much. But we're continuing on with the hot streak that is Matthew McConaughey's career.
The last 2 years, wow.
I don't think you can give him comeback player of the year this year because he got it last year.
Yeah.
But there's even been talk that there might be a possibility of 2 nominations for Matthew, which has happened before, but we're talking supporting, performance in Mud, which I really, really enjoyed, and we will be talking about at the end of the year. And the film that's opening today, The Dallas Buyers Club, which is a true story on a Texas cowboy who is diagnosed with HIV positive. He is a very homophobic character.
This is 1985, we should mention.
Yes, this is 1985. And because of his condition and because of the medication that is, of course, approved by the FDA is not working, he decides to get into the drug dealing business. Oh, I'm sorry, membership dealing business, by picking up drugs from Mexico that are not approved by the FDA and helping out the community. Am I missing anything on that?
Nope. We should mention the character of Rayon, played by Jared Leto, who
Jared Leto
also going to probably get some Oscar consideration for supporting category. And the setup here is that he is a transvestite prostitute. I should say she is a transvestite prostitute who desires to be a woman, so she's what we would call today transgendered.
Yes.
But needless to say, so, you know, a redneck cowboy who likes to fight people and use the F word towards gay people.
Yes.
Does not have a real, you know, someone who's going to be able to cater to that clientele. So he recruits Rayon to be kind of his go-between, and they start with a very nasty relationship, very insulting and dismissive. And I'm not going to say that at the end they are, you know, tremendous friends and lifelong buddies, but
a lesser film would have done that.
Yeah, something happens there, and because it is more restrained, it feels very real. Just 2 terrific performances. Definitely, I think you're going to see this movie get a lot of Oscar consideration, probably Best Picture. I think Matthew McConaughey is a lock as a nomination for Best Actor in this. We haven't talked about his physical transformation for
this. Well, you wrote about this online. Yes, this is also the film that's getting talked about because he lost a lot of weight. Because this, as many spouses I've talked to, this is not the film they want to see Matthew McConaughey without a shirt on. But I remember saying, this is like Machinist skinny.
Yeah, just about. They're both guys are both about the same height. And both got to about the same weight.
Right.
I heard McConaughey got down to 135 pounds, which for, I think he's like 5'11", that's pretty
strong. That's really,
scrawny.
Yeah, this is an old Bill Cosby, but you use him to get the football out of the sewer.
Yeah. So the one thing is, if you look at the trailers there, you know, with the big, you know, cheesy mustache and the cowboy and everything, literally, I think a lot of people look at this and say, okay, I heard Matthew McConaughey is in this. Who's this scrawny dude?
Right.
And they would not recognize him.
I think it was our colleague Ed Johnsonado who made a point of saying, there really wasn't a look at me image. I mean, you see how skinny the body is. I remember there's a scene in particular where he's in the hospital. He had just met the Jared Leto character and he gets a leg cramp. So moments like, because yeah, even his legs are skinny. It's
I'm not sure. Is he actually even shirtless in this movie? There is no showing it off moment. You just sort of see it, but the gauntness in his face. I wrote my review. His cheekbones look like two lonely buttes out on the plains.
Very nice.
And just, you know, everything's caved in. That'd be the best way to describe it.
It's
he looks caved in. And you know, you get this idea that here was a guy who's probably already thin and rangy, you know, Texas rangy.
Right.
And he's probably just been losing weight with drugs and alcohol and other things that he doesn't know about.
My wife was the first she asked me was, how did he contract it? And I'm like, well, it's not that type of film. It's not outrage, but no, we believe it's from women and from sharing lots
of stuff that he shouldn't be sharing. And you know, like his jeans, he's got his big old Texas belt buckle because apparently everyone has to have that.
It's required. But you know what it is, Kobe? State law.
But he's got like a foot of extra belt hanging off the end out of the belt buckle because he's probably just been cinching it and like making new holes.
Yes. Yeah. In the other way. Okay, I'm gonna. I have my mug here because apparently I'm gonna need this.
As he takes a sip of Haterade.
Haterade.
As he braced himself.
No, because I'm gonna be anyway. I really wish this film had been made 10 years ago.
Why?
Or even 20 years ago, because I'm gonna borrow a term from Ed Johnsonat. I love the performances, but the script reminded me of what Ed once called an R-rated after school special. There is a bit of an HIV Schindler's List feel to this. I think Matthew McConaughey's character could have shared a condo with Denzel Washington's character in Philadelphia, where he eventually grows to be an understanding. So, and as you mentioned earlier, the relationship he has with Jared Leto's character, you know, is harsh, and then there is a mutual understanding until he gets applause at the end for losing something.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think it's the strongest script in the world.
No.
I think the direction is nice just because it's restrained. They coax the right performances out of not just these two actors, but everyone that's in it. Some plotting stuff also, kind of about two-thirds of the way through, it gets a little...
As much as I like looking at Jennifer Garner, there's not a whole lot for her to do here except be on Matthew McConaughey's side. And the thing about this film, as well as Mud, is McConaughey is able to use the charm that everybody likes about him and use it without overusing it, like in his romantic comedies. And I think the reason why Garner is there, because I'm sure she was, you know, an actual character, but they needed a woman in the movie.
We need a cute woman.
We need a dinner scene with the two of them, you know, that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I thought, but I said, it reminded me of like, I wish Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas had been made 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because I think it would have had a bigger impact. Because you could say this is, you know, Philadelphia meets Sicko, we're like, big shock, big news, folks. The FDA, not always on the up and up.
Yeah. Well, there's a certain historical aspect to this movie. I mean,
it is a period piece.
We are looking back on almost 30 years ago. And the story of these buyers club wasn't necessarily known to people not in that community of, you know, they sprang up all over the place with this little gag of, well, you're not paying for the drugs, you're paying for the membership, and
correct,
the drugs come free with the membership.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, they were trying to save lives. There was a whole lot of agitation, which, what was that documentary that came out earlier this year? I'm trying to remember the name of it. That was about the early days of AIDS Crusaders.
Oh, geez.
It's escaping my brain right now.
Right.
It's like you will be witness to the... Nah, I can't remember.
Anyway. I think it would have had a bigger impact. But then, you know, I guess it got made now because it finally got made now. So I don't know how long this thing was in development. I mean, if this was something that McConaughey did, like, say, after Time to Kill, we probably would have had a different career. But I just think it would have had a bigger impact for me if it had been done a little closer to the timeline.
Yeah, I see that.
So that, anyway, that's my Haterade moment. But can't deny the performances. And by the way, I'm going to put this out here. If you listen to the show and you are not a member of the IFJA or Kobe's family, there's a joke that I remember Chris and I laughed at really loud at the very beginning. If you see this film and you know what that joke is, I will say it is, there's a line in the movie and it involves actor Rock Hudson.
Oh, yeah.
So if you know what I'm talking about, send me a notice on Twitter or on Facebook, or send me a note at msosi@wfyi.org. And if you respond, we will dig into the WFYI vault, and we'll find you a gift prize of some kind.
Being able to recognize humor.
If you're a fan of movies. It was because I talked to my colleague Jeff Marker down in Gainesville, and yeah, all the critics got that joke. Nobody in the theater else did. So
Gainesville, Florida, or Gainesville,
Georgia. Okay. So anyway,
little Gainesville.
Yes. So do we have a thing there? I know you've been. What are you? You're looking up Dallas Buyers Club.
I'm looking up Dallas Buyers Club and looking up the IU Cinema stuff.
Okay, so you're working.
I'm working.
Multitasking.
Yeah, that's good.
Hang on.
Multis are being tasked.
Now that was a good movie.
Well, I think it's a little stronger than that.
A little stronger than that.
I think that's
the only way the only place I can go from there is here.
Yes.
Yeah. I can handle it. Yeah, you can go. Right. You know, Chris likes it more than me. I still enjoyed it. I think I'd definitely go for the performances.
I think that's a shot for my top 10 list, but it would definitely be at the bottom end of that top 10 list.
All right. So also in theaters today, I didn't realize it's been 14 years since The Best Man.
Which I had to put this in my review. It was the first line of my review was, I literally did not know this was a sequel when I saw it. I mean,
I watched the
entire movie not knowing it was a sequel.
I did. I vaguely remember The Best Man. I think Morris Chestnut and Tay Diggs. I don't even remember if Terrence Howard was in it or not. But
yeah.
But they're somehow back together again. There's a lot of them. And it's The Best Man Holiday. So it's the cast of The Best Man in December.
Yeah.
And thus the title. Chris, you saw this.
Yeah. So the setup, you know, the first movie was a romantic dramedy about a bunch of friends, you know, kind of just out of high school, that like early to mid 20s range, you know. Dealing with life and careers and
things and
hopping in and out of each other's beds. I think there's four men and five women, you know, and so now it's supposed to be 14, 15 years later. Now they're, you know, honing in on 40. Some careers are going great. Some careers are ending. Some careers are just starting.
Of course.
Some people are married to each other. Some people have slept with each other. And there is crossover between those two lists, which causes resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just kind of, you know, it really is cinematic comfort food. It's kind of a, you know, a great movie for Thanksgiving for, you know, people to go out and see. Great cast, gorgeous cast.
Yes.
Like spending time with these people. Very, very predictable. I mean, they just, you know, writer-director Malcolm D. Lee is just absolutely putting them through the paces that they would go through and setting up false conflicts just because, well, we've got a movie and it has to last almost 2 hours.
Yeah, I was surprised at the running time. I thought it would be a little shorter than that.
It's just things like, you know, like, so like one character is married to another. She's pregnant, and I won't give it away, but, you know, the whole group gets some very bad news during the course of the proceedings. And so there's a point where, you know, this guy who's married to another woman is comforting another female, like in the kitchen, like, oh, yeah, it's terrible that this has happened, giving her, you know, that if you were to like do a painting of what they were doing, they would call it the chaste embrace. I mean, it was absolutely no one could confuse this for romance, but the wife sees them and, you know, storms off in a huff because she's jealous, because that's what the script requires her to do, not because that would actually make sense.
You know what that is, Kobe? Plot things.
That sounds like plot.
That does sound like plot
kind
things.
The basic plot that, you know, that kind of everything else is circling around is that the Morris Chestnut character, Lance, is NFL running back. He's now like the greatest running back ever and is about to retire.
Wait, running back in his late 30s?
Yeah,
that's fiction right there. Yeah,
exactly. But he's about to retire, and the writer character, who, as you remember, wrote a book about loosely based on all his friends in the first movie that caused some resentment. Now he's being pushed to write a biography of his friend, basically just because his career is in the toilet and he needs some money.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what everything revolves around. They all get together for the holidays, and he's doing this dance of trying to convince his friend to do the book. And
I see. But Morris Chestnut's not walking like Earl Campbell. I'm sorry, he's not walking like Earl Campbell.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't walk out like, I don't know if you heard about the screening for this
now,
the other day.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of this on Facebook.
With our good friend Max Williams, who one of the studio reps.
Ladies and gentlemen, now we know... Friends, we know we're not talking about you, of course, but we're talking about your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. But you know what? give the movie rep, when you go to an advanced screening and we see you and you see us, we're the ones that get the row with the pieces of paper, you know, saying reserved. But you know what? Give the ad reps a break. They didn't put the movie in the projection booth. I already griped
right.
about Thor last week. and they didn't book the movie. So get off their case.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say this because,
well, the way these things work, you know, these promo screenings that, you know, we and most of the people see these at.
We.
Is that, you know, they're usually set up, you know, through a radio station or some other outfit. The Film Yap often gives out tickets. Other people give out
yep.
tickets. And they always give out more tickets than they have seats. And
it's the airport, folks.
And the reason they do it is because not everyone who gets tickets shows up.
Yes. Or even better, the contest where, did I win? Yeah. Oh, you win. I can't go that night.
Yeah.
Why'd you call?
So whatever it is, like if there's 250 seats, they'll give away 350 tickets. I don't know what the actual number is, but
sure.
it's something like that.
But then, yeah.
Well, every now and then you get a really popular movie, you know, either something with superheroes or something that appeals to a particular demographic, old people, women, whatever, and everyone shows up. And unfortunately, they just don't have seats for everybody, so they have to turn a bunch of them away. And boy,
40, was it like 40, I heard 40, 50?
I think it was more than that. I think it was approaching 100 people.
And
something got turned away.
I bet they were not happy.
They were not always. And the story that I've heard through social media is that there was a pregnant woman who threatened to throw up on people if she didn't get a seat.
Wow.
Jeez.
Which, is that like a superpower that only pregnant women have? That you can just
I don't know, but that woman,
up?
You know, that woman, I hope your kid's a spaz. So
yeah.
there.
Just chill out, people. It's a free movie.
It's a free
you
movie.
Thought you were going to see a free movie. You didn't get to see a free movie.
See, this is really bad because the last time I heard of an incident this ugly was Mamma Mia.
Really?
Yeah, there were some a nice young lady who's no longer doing these sort of jobs received the wrath of a bunch of old people because they could not go see Mamma Mia. So, folks, relax.
Just chill out.
Chill out. There will be others.
Yes, and the worst screening experience I ever, in this case, what they do is, you know, they hold the people out in a holding area and they try and find seats for absolutely
yeah.
everybody, but there's a certain point they have to say, sorry,
that's it.
There's literally nothing left in there.
Yep. You even take our row, so thanks.
There was an occasion where, for whatever reason, instead of doing that, I think it was some other studio reps that didn't know what they were doing, they actually let the people into the theater and they were lining up along the sides of the theater, up along the staircase. Just sort of like waiting for, I guess, for someone to like, you know, like vultures
die.
Waiting for someone to fall over. They're like waiting for someone to get out of their seat and go get popcorn. I don't know. And they're going to jump in there. It was pretty nasty.
Do you remember the film?
I don't remember. It was a while ago. And the thing was, you know, they had the press row was way open. And the thing is, sometimes they have to hold them open for a reason.
Yep.
I don't know why, but you know, they can't fill the seats. And people were just standing there like, you know, all grouped up around me because there were like, you know, six or seven open seats next to me. Like, you know, like I had, you know, bore Hitler's baby or something. I don't know what. It was
I would be impressed
like,
if you did that, but.
It was pretty crazy. And yeah, the thing is, every now and then they will actually give up and let people into the press row.
Yes.
And it's almost always a disaster for me personally when they
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, I don't
that.
Like them in a row.
They keep. It's like they go through that crowd of people waiting and said, who is the worst individual here? Okay, I'm going to sit you
next. Who's going to text? Who's going to keep their phone on?
Oh, yeah.
Who's gonna talk through the movie?
Drunk people making out. That's who got seated
yeah.
next to me in press row.
You have had that.
And this particular one with the Best Men Holiday. I've already put it out on social media, so I don't mind putting it out here. The security working the thing, who are supposed to like keep people from talking and keep people from pulling their phones out and texting, they sat next to me, would not stop talking, and started texting people. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So, the screening of The Best Man Holiday was not that great. The movie was not that great. But it's not awful.
It's not hella bad.
I can tell you, the crowd watching it just loved it.
Of course.
So, if you're in that crowd, you know, if you like the first Best Man movie, if you found that comforting, you'll probably find this comforting. Yeah. It's not hella bad.
He was going to say it was bad. It's just predictable.
It's not bad.
So, okay. So, Mr. Slagle.
Well, you said you like to spend time with these people, and that's fine.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to remember, was Gene Siskel had the old, you know.
Two people
thing,
having lunch?
Yeah, like, would you rather see these same characters, you know, just having lunch and talking instead or doing anything else? It's like, you know, I could have found much better things to do with this cast than what they did, but you know, it's such a likable cast that you know it's hard to hate them.
I always take Gene Siskel's thing on that and say, and enhance it by saying, I would want on the DVD the rap party with this cast.
Yeah.
So there are certain, you know, there are certain ensembles you know you want to see
them
fooling and being silly. All right, Kobe, what is happening at IU Cinema?
Well,
that's your alma mater, you know.
I know. IU Cinema tonight, 7 o'clock, 1926. The Flying Ace. You know it?
South Wolf Camel. That's a Snoopy.
No.
No, it's not. Okay.
It is not.
Sorry.
I'm sorry for you, Matthew. That's not. Tomorrow, Saturday, 3 o'clock, Within Our Gates from 1919.
Silent.
Drawing a blank there. Okay. Nope. Bless Their Little Hearts from 1984 at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, Saturday night at IU Cinema. Sunday, 3 p.m., Your Children Come Back to You from 1979. 6:30 p.m., Pierre Lefou.
How do you spell it?
F-O-U.
Oh, good. Okay.
Mm-hmm. From 1965. And Monday, 7 o'clock, in the President's Choice series from IU Cinema. This is the man that once picked The Song Remains the Same. I think
the IU President.
Yes. I think he played The Wall once, I remember reading here.
Wow.
Can you guess what this is going to be?
You mentioned The Wall. You mentioned The Song Remains the Same. Woods, Wattstax.
No.
Am I close? Am I close,
no.
Don Johnson?
You are. No. It's not what I said.
The Room.
Nope.
I don't know.
Chris?
Any guesses?
Care to venture a guess here?
What the IU President
President's
picked?
Choice.
Zardoz.
Nope. 2004. Downfall.
Ooh.
Oh. Okay, with the actual dialogue or the YouTube imitations?
Yes, this is the one, if you've seen it on YouTube, where Bruno Ganz, who does a great performance as Hitler, this is Hitler in the bunker in the final days, and somehow some basement dweller, and we thank them for it, even though there's way too many of them out there. The Hitler diatribe where he's acting like a basketball coach, and chewing out everybody that works for him. That's where that comes from. And yes, I think the first time I saw it was Hillary Clinton's election campaign that just went down the tubes. Yeah. So, and I believe Hammer and Nigel did it with Butler basketball. So yes, Downfall. Go see that. Go hang out with the President of IU and check that out.
Also, just wanted to continue on here.
Sure.
Tuesday, 7 o'clock, Hello Goodbye from 2012. And Thursday, that's next Thursday, the 21st, 7 o'clock, Medora.
All right.
Yeah, and Medora's also going to be playing at Indie IMAX. I believe it's a run starting next week, the 22nd, and that week on.
Go check it out.
Go check out Medora, homegrown, about a real small-town Indiana basketball team that like hasn't won a game in like, what is it?
It was like, well, I think like 2 seasons. Because I believe they were winless the year before, and then we're following them in the second season. And this is southern Indiana. This is a town that is, well, seen better days, and it's a small town and a small school going up against consolidated schools.
Yeah.
So there's that uphill battle, plus real kids doing real stuff.
Yeah.
And
not American teen stuff.
No, but, not American teen stuff. Not John Hughes stuff. Not even. I'm sorry.
I hate when they do John Hughes stuff.
Well, it's overrated. So and not because I'm a hater. Or not S.E. Hinton stuff either. So well, it's actually more like S.E. Hinton than say John Hughes.
It's sort of the Hoosier hoop dreams, except you know instead of trying to like break into the NBA, they want to win a game
or get out of town, literally.
Yeah. I should mention just as a personal aside. Seventh grade, my junior high football team, which I obviously was not, as if you couldn't tell by looking at me, I was not a member of.
No, I was going to say, you could have been a lineman in seventh grade.
Not only did they not win a game that year, they did not score a point that year.
Wow.
We always wonder, like, what is the coach, you know how at the end of any season, a coach, you know, sits down with his team and, you know, gives them that rah-rah speech. What do you say, what does the coach say at the end of that season? Like, well, okay, boys, the result was the same as if you hadn't shown up. And done all those practices in the hot sun.
That team right there that you just mentioned still wouldn't start Tebow.
Thus
our Tebow dig of the week. I'm sorry.
Tune in next week for more. wanted to continue on that path because
oh, sure.
I saw, scrolling down the page here, I saw that Midnight Movies returns next weekend
oh.
at IU Cinema. There is not one this weekend, but next weekend the Midnight Movies return.
So, what are they gonna show?
Possession.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Interesting. But yeah, Medora, check out Medora. Do we, has that film received a rating? Because that's film, that film's gonna get an R rating and it's really gonna bug me.
I'm really not sure.
Cause you have teenagers drinking and smoking. Guess what happens, folks?
Yeah.
And while we're on the MPAA is dumb, portion of the show, I rented the biopic Lovelace, which I will get to in a little bit. And I love writing that on social media. It's like, it is work related. Seriously. There's a documentary that I saw a trailer for called, Cutie and the Boxer. And it's about an old Japanese boxer artist. Basically, what in the trailer, you see him painting using, he dips boxing gloves into paint and then literally beats the canvas.
Hmm.
And that's his artwork. And it's him and his wife, and they've been around. I mean, they're in their 70s, and they've been around for a long time. This is a film that, now, of course, when you see the trailer, there's usually a green band or a red band, which we never play here, of, you know, telling you what it's rated and why. Ladies and gentlemen, Cutie and the Boxer is rated R for nude art images.
There was a statue in the background, and...
Do we have Joe Shearer's, and by the way, Joe brought this up and I always like bringing it up. It was, I think it was Entertainment Weekly did a really nice write-up about how flawed the MPAA system is. And it talked about the film Once, which I absolutely loved. It was, I remember, my number two film that year, and a very sweet film about two street musicians who make music together, and it's kind of a will they, won't they, and it was rated R because of language. So it received the same rating as Hostel Part 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do we have Joe Shearer's It's Dumb?
Yes, we do.
I feel better, because that's how,
dumb.
That's how I feel about the MPAA right now. Play it again.
Man,
I'm angry.
It's dumb.
It really bugs me. Nude art images.
That's dumb.
Not smoking, not drinking, nude art. And it's not a Mapplethorpe documentary.
And Jaws was rated PG.
Yeah, I know. And there was an article that came out. I know this was in the Non Nouveau. This was in the Indianapolis USA Star today. About gun violence in PG-13 films of top levels in R-rated movies.
Yeah.
So are we feeling like it's 1983 again?
Yeah.
You know, with films like Dark Knight and The Avengers and Skyfall. And yeah. The Amazing Spider-Man, Dark Knight Rises. So
I liked your name for the local daily newspaper there, by the way. Those, you know, it's Amalgamated Newspaper Products Inc., you know.
Pretty much.
You know, published in Washington D.C., designed in Louisville, Kentucky.
But they promised 20 more pages
of USA Today.
USA Today. So not bitter. All right, so yeah, there's the rating system's dumb. And
I once saw, I think it was at Walmart, and it was like a bargain bin thing, and I don't know why I picked it up, but I picked up like one of the Three Ninjas movies on DVD.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I didn't buy it. I picked it up and I looked at the back. I think I saw like on the front it was like rated PG-13 or something. I was like, why is this rated PG-13? And turn it over on the back, literally nonstop ninja action.
Well, that's what you hope for in a ninja movie, I hope. You know, I have my copy of Ninja's Creed. That better have nonstop ninja action and Gail Kim. So,
yeah.
Ninja action, really?
Nonstop ninja action. That's what it read.
That, you know what? That's what this show needs. We need more nonstop ninja action.
That should be a new game for the PlayStation 4. Nonstop ninja action.
Oh, man.
That would be great.
You know what? And buy your system today.
It would be for 16 and above. Mm-hmm. Bad. Jeez. All right, I want to move on. And actually, while I'm on the subject of because I brought up the film Lovelace, because you know, there are not too many films we get.
Did
to
you see
films.
It?
I did. But yeah, because I rented it, and then people made fun of me because I'm like, no, it's work related. Seriously, this is one with Amanda Siegfried and a pretty impressive cast: Hank Azaria, Debbie Mazur, Chris Noth, Adam Brody, Chloe Sevigny, Wes Bentley, Bobby Cannavale, Juno Temple, Adam Brody, and by the way, I love cinematic gene pools. Apparently in this film, if you have Sharon Stone and Robert Patrick, you make Amanda Siegfried. Ponder that. But of course, this is the story of Linda Lovelace, who starred in Deep Throat and then went through kind of literally hell and back. Yes, literally hell and back with her abusive husband and you know the whole shebang about the early 70s. So I'm watching this film, and by the way, it's okay. If you've never seen Inside Deep Throat, Boogie Nights, or Star 80, you'll probably get a lot more out of it. But I've seen all three, so I feel like it's warmed over material. But within the first 10 minutes of the film, there were two things that really irritated me with this. Now, the beginning of the film, they even tell you it's Florida, 1970. And she is, you know, she's not in the movies yet. She's living at home. And she meets the guy who's going to be her husband, played by Peter Skarsgård, who's got he does the best with a very shallow character. They're on the beach at a party. And in 1970, his character, the guy named Chuck, mentions the film The French Connection. For those who don't know, that didn't come out until 1971. So that bugged me, because I'm that person. If you're doing a movie in 1970, I don't want to hear. And I remember I ranted about this about a film I actually like. And
she couldn't have said like Midnight Cowboy,
right? Or exactly, or MASH, or you know, Catch 22, something. No, so we as if that wasn't enough. The couple scenes later, they're at his swinging bachelor pad, and he's going to put on a record so they can make out, and the needle drops on the vinyl record, and it's Fooled Around and Fell in Love by Elvin Bishop, recorded in 1975. It just bothers me. You know what? There's a lot of great music from 1970 or before. Yeah. Use that.
Yeah, I did not see this one. I literally could not convince any of the film yappers to take the DVD and review it.
Seriously?
I had it for like a month beforehand, I think. I was like,
you should have called me.
See, I didn't know you didn't get one, so I would
have. I didn't get one. I had to go to a Redbox.
You could have guest reviewed it for the film.
We'll have to work on that. But, oh, and by the way, and I think the reason why it's in there, because there's a couple of wink and nods, because the song, which is on oldies radio right now, playing somewhere in the world with Mickey Thomas on vocals. But, of course, that was a song that was used in Boogie Nights. And later in the film, it jumps to the late 70s, and Amanda Seyfried is taking a lie detector test, or Linda Lovelace is taking a lie detector test, and the person conducting the lie detector test is Eric Roberts. Hmm. So I'm thinking they wanted to do a little wink and a nod to other films about the porn world, but... But I call shenanigans on it. I'm like, that's just wrong. I don't like that.
Eric Roberts in Star 80. I think it was the first movie I ever saw. I mean, I was just a kid, and I was just like, boy, this is really bad acting.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was scary.
Really?
Well, for 1982, I think. And, of course, this was the film promoted that you were going to see Mariel Hemingway topless.
Yeah.
And anybody
was why I was watching.
Right. Anybody, yeah, who had seen Manhattan, you're like, oh, she's 17 then. So we're creepy but ethical, folks. But that's just a really uncomfortable movie to watch. It was Bob Fosse's last film.
I guess that's why I didn't like him in it. I just thought the character is so relentless.
So reptilian.
Yeah, that you're just like, is this a real person?
Well, and it turns out with Lovelace, yeah, he kind of was.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was also a true story based on the life of Dorothy Stratton. But as I didn't know while watching this was this guy, who the Chuck character, when she eventually got away from him. The film goes from before Deep Throat, making of Deep Throat, then it jumps to 6 years later when we find out that she's been in a real abusive relationship with this guy, and he owes money to film producers. And then it jumps to 6 years after that when she famously appeared on Donahue to promote her autobiography. But this guy wound up after the divorce, he wound up marrying Marilyn Chambers. So he's even like a sleazier version of John Derek. If you can imagine that, don't look it up, Cobb. So yeah, it's again. I've seen this material before, so it didn't do a whole heck of a lot for me, and I don't know. So, but then those little things that just really bother me. Sidebar. It's a show. Shut up.
Bidesar.
Yeah. I got to interview Elvin Bishop a decade ago. He was doing some gig in Indiana. I was doing it for Nuvo. And I asked him, I said, did you ever see the film Boogie Nights? And he's like, no. And I said, well, you know your song's in. And he's like, yeah, I just haven't gotten around to watching it. Now, Boogie Nights, great Paul Thomas Anderson film. Great film about family in the porn industry. But there's the William H. Macy character whose wife is constantly fooling around with him, with other men, usually in front of him. And there's a party going on. It's a house run by Burt Reynolds, his character, not actually him. Although it could
probably not far off the truth for that area.
Not with Dinah Shore around. But anyway, but the William H. Macy character comes into a shot and they play the song Fooled Around, Fell in Love. And he looks down and there's a circle of guys down an alleyway. And then he comes over to the circle and it's his wife on top of or being mounted by a guy. And everybody's just watching it. And so this song plays throughout. And I also remember it was used in Summer of Sam, the Spike Lee film. Not as effectively, but still pretty good. And so I asked Elvin if he had seen the film. He's like, no. About a year or so later, I saw him at the Chicago Blues Festival and reminded him of this. Anyway, yeah, I've seen it. And? Well, it was interesting, wasn't it? Check cleared.
Speaking of Spike Lee... I'm hearing
Old Boy.
I'm hearing troubling things about Old Boy. Like the studio doesn't seem to want to screen it for critics.
Well, that's not. Unfortunately, that's a regular thing with us. Sometimes.
But like I was talking with that friend of mine who's basically the indie star film critic because he's the McClatchy Wire guy and all this stuff gets run here.
Right.
He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, having like work with them. They're not. Supposedly, like even New York, they've. Wow.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Mm.
And other guttural noises. All right. Let's move on to what's on DVD and Blu-ray. I think I got everything covered there, didn't I? Yes. Well, the big title this week, Man of Steel.
Yep.
Good. Let's move on. this film is probably the best example of the summer movies where there was a lot of high hopes and it just didn't totally deliver.
It was one of the darkness movies. They didn't actually have the word dark in its title, like Thor.
Although Christopher Nolan's a producer and Zack Knight's directing it, and
it's just like we've got to have our superheroes dour and dreary these days because if you ever see that YouTube channel Honest Trailers,
yes,
says because God forbid a Superman movie should actually be even a little bit fun.
Right, and Superman apparently, as we learned, Superman flied for your sins, and that's what happens. The passion of the Superman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he disappears and comes back at the age of 33, just like a certain other celestial traveler.
That's right. But unlike the other director, I think these guys like Jewish people. Anyway,
And he's British.
And he's, oh gosh, yeah, that's the other. And I like these foreign guys playing the Man of Steel because it's truth, justice, and the American way. Well, it's okay. Yeah, there's some moments that are fun.
There's some good stuff in here.
Good moments. You know, I guess we get to have, speaking of Christ figures, Kevin Costner's in this movie, and you think it was 1991 being the voice of reason.
And he was actually really good in it.
He's pretty good because, although this is, as young Superman, this is the time you're going to rebel against your dad.
Or as someone pointed out cleverly, your two Robin Hood dads.
Yes,
him and Russell Crowe both played Robin
Hood. Russell Crowe's pretty good in this. He's not, you know what? He's not reading off cue cards.
Yeah. The problem with this movie, Zack Snyder directed it, and he's been a real up and down director. He's made some movies that I just loved. He did Watchmen. He did the remake of, was it Dawn of the Dead?
He also did Sucker Punch,
fun. Which there was one or two brilliant sequences in Sucker Punch, along with some crazy, loopy, nasty stuff.
Uh huh.
But, what they did is they basically took the first two Supermans with
Christopher Reeve.
With Christopher Reeve. And they said, okay, let's take those two movies.
And morph them together.
And smash them into one movie. Because it's all about, the second half is all about General Zod. And
played by Michael Shannon, he's pretty good. He's
a
no
nice
Terrence
General
Stamp,
Zod.
But he's, you know.
The problem is, you know, there's that, none of that part where he comes into being Superman and he embraces being Superman and he reveals himself to the world as Superman and the world, you know,
he's in chains.
You know, embraces him.
And there's the military, and
yeah,
military is treating him like Batman, like he's some vigilante.
Yeah, it's just boom, he's Superman, and here's General Zod, and they destroy half of Manhattan,
which I have to give credit to Jim Mueller, our colleague here at WFYI, who said, you know, when two guys that equally strong hit each other, they're not going to travel 500 miles. If Superman hit you or I, we would fly 8 blocks or,
yes,
you know, that sort of thing. So there was that. There was how many people were killed, and this is, and I'm becoming Mr. Morality on this one. How many people were killed as they were trashing Metropolis? And then, oh, but when the lasers are about ready to hit a family, that's when Superman gets mad.
Yeah.
Little things like that.
I really like the first half of this movie where, you know, it was about the fathers and sons and the two credos of, you know, do you join with humanity? Do you become the savior, or do you, I mean, I really thought that was enough for a movie right there. And, you know, this, and the second half of it would be all about him coming out, you know, getting together with the Lois Lane character and finding his way and revealing himself and some kind of existential threat just because you need it. And then you make a second movie that's General Zod. Because I would have loved to have seen that Michael Shannon character, you know, sprawl out in basically his own movie. And I don't know why they decided to do that, but they just said, let's just cram all this in here, and man. Wow.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things, and I'm also going to sound like an old person, was I miss seeing the two characters. I mean, we get, yeah, there's Clark and Superman, but it's not, it's Clark as a kid, and I know they're probably, there's going to be a second one, they're doing it, there's no... Anyway, but, you know, we're going to see him play the two characters. I mean, that was the thing that made Reeves so good, was he could play Superman and Clark Kent equally well. So, but yeah.
The big problem they've always had with this, of course, with the Superman universe, and Kevin Smith has talked about this, you know, but it's really like, why is there a Clark Kent? Why does Superman need there to be a Clark Kent guy that he does during the daytime and pretends... That's just more time he could be out saving people.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, granted, you know, he was raised by the Kents, so, you know, up until age 18 or whatever, he could be Clark Kent. But once he becomes Superman, what possible reason is there for him to ever go back? They say, like, oh, so he's a journalist, so he knows what's going on. He's Superman. He can hear what they're saying in China.
The problem is he's got to look over Jimmy and Lois because they're always getting in the trouble. Now we're talking about the TV show.
But by the way, also, I hate to be nasty, but Amy Adams, love her. Way too old to be Lois Lane. Way too old.
You know what? You can feel that way. I don't care. and by the way, trying to make Diane Lane into frumpy farm mom. Yeah, the bollocks on that too. So, all right. So that's out there. Turbo, which was the animated film, featuring the voice of somebody on Kobe's List.
Yep.
That's Ryan Reynolds.
His hit list, hopefully.
Yeah, he's got a list of actors he doesn't like, and Ryan's not.
Is Dane Cook on it?
Oh yes. That's up. You don't have them in order, do you?
No.
Okay. They're just there.
Yeah, they're just
But this is the snail who gets to be really fast, and they enter a snail in the Indianapolis 500, even though it has no sponsorship whatsoever. And apparently can outrace Danica.
Yeah.
And it's cute, it's harmless. 3D? Nah, not really. And there are other snails with the voices of Samuel L. Jackson, and there's it does end with a climax. Will the snail win the race?
Yeah.
Not really shocking anything there. The only issue I had with the film was that there is a European race car driver. I don't think it's based on anybody, although I'm sure there are racing conspiracy theorists that will come and throw me information on that. But he turns into a bad guy like the night before the race, and I don't think it's necessary to have that. I think, you know what, if you're in fast vehicles or in a shell going 250 some odd miles an hour, you don't need to have some sort of rush Talladega Nights rivalry with a guy, especially if you're a snail with the voice of Ryan Reynolds. So
yeah. It's kind of too bad this movie didn't do better, because it's the rare movie that, you know, features Indianapolis 500.
Sure.
I've heard that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like shots of this, you know, supposed skyline.
Yeah, apparently they captured the look of it very well. So
and that's too bad. And I feel bad because, you know, we often complain on here about, you know, the fact that the studios kind of don't treat us so well, don't screen everything. They were really good to us on Turbo. They, like, you know, during the actual 500 this year, they had actor Michael Pena and the director, and they offered us to him. And they offered, you know, they screened the movie, and I didn't do anything for this movie.
You're a bad person.
I still have not seen it, and I really feel bad about
it. You hate Indianapolis, apparently. Yeah.
Apparently, this movie just, I don't know. I feel really bad that the film yet did not do better by this movie.
There
so if they're out there listening, mea culpa.
There you go. And I got to see it with Laura Steele. Anyway.
Name in the one-upsmanship aisle, everybody, Matthew Soucy.
Also out on Blu-ray this week, Blackfish, which was a film I finally watched because CNN aired it. And yeah, if you you really want to freak out your kids and don't ever go to SeaWorld or anything less than SeaWorld, go check this out.
Or want them never to procreate.
Yeah, so it is a heartbreaking look at the treatment of whales for your entertainment dollars. So there's that. On Criterion, they have, and I love when Criterion does something fairly new, because they usually do classic films. The Noah Baumbach film, Francis Ha, which apparently we need to be checking out.
Another one that did not screen for us. I'm hearing heard very, very good things about Greta Gerwig in that.
Yep. And the other Criterion title, which I'm really excited for, and in a shameless plug, they don't sponsor us, but I have to put the word out there as a film lover, Criterion's 50% off at Barnes & Noble through December 2nd.
Wow.
Yes, I already picked up Safety last. And the other title I'm looking for, Charlie Chaplin's City Lights.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The first film my daughter ever saw me cry while watching.
That's probably my favorite Chaplin film.
Yeah, Chaplin helps out a blind girl, Cobe. You should check it out. You could rent it. You know what? Get a date and go watch it.
Pathos.
This. So, yeah, I remember seeing that at the old, we saw it at the old, Ron Keating's old place on the South Side.
Key Cinemas.
Key Cinemas. So we saw that.
Ron just retired a few weeks ago.
Salute to Ron. So
one of the great exhibitors of Indianapolis history. Not,
and champion of local film.
Exhibitionist, exhibitor.
Yes, we can't have them on radio. So, but yeah, I always remember seeing that. And then Emma and I both cried at the same time watching The Illusionist. So fine there. See, also out on Blu-ray, Not Fade Away, or I can't remember. I think it was one of your guys from the Philby app that said David Chase forces you to look at his record collection and talk about when rock and roll was great. And it's kind of his Valentine of the 60s garage band. It's kind of David Chase's That
own,
Thing You Do.
And his own rock and roll dreams. It's more or less a biography of his own experiences.
So there's that. And did you see The Guilt Trip?
No.
That's fine. I didn't either. Let's move on. Also out on Blu-ray, as far as old titles, apparently, yes, they're with Man of Steel out, they decided to put out some other Costner films on Blu-ray, which I kind of thought they already did.
Yeah.
Like JFK, 13 Days. Do we really need 13 Days on Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay.
That's more like a question. Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Also out on Blu-ray, Akira. I believe it's the 30th anniversary for that. All the President's Men, a film that made a slew of people want to go into journalism school and thinking they will turn into Robert Redford. No, sorry. Still a great film. Also, The Way We Were. And by the way, since we're on Robert Redford, All Things Lost, or All Is Lost, go see it.
Really
it's
good?
I think it's even more tense than Gravity.
Wow.
Yeah. And partly because, well, you have a better chance of being lost at sea than you do in outer space. Not this show, Lost in Space. But he's really good. It's really tense. It's kind of like, do you remember 127 Hours and Buried?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for bringing up Ryan Reynolds so much, Kobe. I mean, that's because Buried was a more intense situation. That doesn't necessarily make it a better film. But the whole film is Ryan Reynolds in a box.
Yeah.
And this one is Robert Redford at sea.
Literally, Hollywood wants to put him in a box.
Yes. So
127 Hours. Rent that.
Yeah, don't rent that.
It's a hard watch. But
it is a hard watch. And so, speaking of, are we done with Survivor movies now? Captain Phillips, Gravity, 12 Years a Slave, All Is Lost. Can we have something else?
Yeah.
And they're all really good films and even excellent films. Man,
yeah,
that's a gut wrench.
I can't believe I'm still actually seeing people in movies do some variation of I don't want to live, I don't want to survive, I want to live.
Right.
I think there was actually even in 12 Years a Slave, if I'm not mistaken, I was just like, wow.
Could be that. You know who's in 12 Years a Slave?
What?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh!
Harvard University.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, love Chiwetel Ejiofor. Start learning his name, folks, because you really should.
Yep.
All right, I think we have some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
So, go check out the Film Yap. Yep. And I think is your segment on Indie Style's website right now?
It's on the website Or so, actually, it's on the Film Yap, too. We have a link to it there on the news section.
Okay, Chris, thank you so much for hanging out. And thank your family for letting you hang out with us. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, go see a good movie, whether people survive it or not, or either way, you deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Whether they survive or not.
Go see it. You deserve it.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.
Go.